My name is Amber Cortez. I'm 28 years old. It is October 29th, 2005. I'm at Grand Central Terminal, and I'm going to be interviewing my father.
I am Cesar Cortez, age 76, date October 29, 2005, location Grand Central Terminal, relationship to partner is daughter.
All right.
So, father. It's okay.
Okay, let's just start with talking about your early childhood. You were born in Cadiz, Spain, in 1929. What kind of early memories do you have of living in Cadiz when you were a child?
Well, the Cadiz is very tranquil and easy town, 5,000 years old. And the only remembering, because it was only just 5 years, is practically nothing, only just being happy and content, but nothing special memories. The only thing that I could remember is my father's description of his job, which actually he was a policeman, a bodyguard of the Spanish first dictator, Primo de Rivera, who was in Sevilla, and he used to talk about his experiences in these trips. I don't know if I remember that or just they told me after that and I just retroactively remember. But it's the only thing I can say.
Mm-hmm. So what was your father like?
Well, my father was very hard-driving man, a policeman, very concerned with duty and his job. He was very liberal, actually leftist, free thinker. He was very fond of a Masonic sect, and he was very involved in, he was not involved in political affiliations, but very involved with the cultural and explosion, intellectual explosion of the time in Spain, 1936, who was extremely high, very one of the leading nations in European cultural and scientific direction at that point, before the Civil War started.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you mentioned that you were homeschooled by your mother from the age of 5 to 11. What was that like for you and your brother and sister?
The schooling was not present because Spain don't have any elementary school at that time. You had to get a private tuition at home or in some private school. So I didn't get any elementary school, actually, until I was age 10. Because when the war started, I was age 7, and I couldn't go to school at all. So that means that I cannot tell you any previous education until the age of 10.
Mm-hmm. And when you were growing up, do you remember I used to play with neighborhood kids when I was growing up, like Sabrina and Davin and all the kids in the neighborhood? What kind of friends did you have? Did you have friends in your neighborhood? And what kind of things did you guys do? And what kind of games did you play?
Well, very restricted. In Cadiz, I don't remember anything. I was very young. It's 5. In Burgos, where I was living at the age of 7 when the war started, I remember very positive relationship with my neighbors. We were living in, we were employees, the government in the correctional institution, prison, and we're living close by. And I used to relate with all the friends of my father's college. And even I remember some kind of emotional attachment I developed with another 7-year-old girl at that time. And it's very, very vivid about how we used to play in front of the prison. As a matter of fact, that when I was playing with her at that time, is when I started to have the first indication of the Civil War, and it was the bombing of Burgos by the Republicans. And I remember seeing the aeroplanes and the bombing dropped down. And when I have, on the other hand, this wonderful moment with this girl.
It's funny. What other kind of early memories do you have at the beginning of the war? I know that it started in 1936 and you were 7 years old.
This is more traumatic. Before go ahead, I want to make a note here. What I'm going to describe is my private experience and my family experience being in the loyalist side, we mean against Franco, which actually was very traumatic and extremely difficult. And we suffer a lot. But I have to say that the other side, the nationalist side, the Franco people, they really suffer equally the same. And as much atrocities that they commit against us, I can say that as much atrocity we commit against them. And this is the tragedy of a civil war.
Mm-hmm. And what was life like just living at that time?
Well, fear of any impending disaster any minute, insecurity that your life could collapse, that your family will be taken away from you, that you could die, or something terrible could happen, not only just to you, but your neighbors and people around you. You know, at that time, Germany and Spain were very close allies, and we always expect some German occupation or invasion or German influence on Franco so that he can do drastic measure against the leftists. Actually, we were living, like sleeping with your enemy, you know. Mm-hmm. So you are living in a country, in a town that everybody could become your enemy, or you could be denounced or just taken away, and you don't know what actually could happen because practically you was in the opposite zone. You were the enemies, but you had to pretend that you were the friends. And this mm-hmm. is a terrible dilemma for a child.
And this, even as a child, did you understand everything that was going on around you?
Yeah, I did understand because one of the major problems that we have is what could happen with my father. You know, my father was condemned to death, and because the mercy of some influential people in Burgos, and my mother was pregnant, and mercy this lady to save my father, he was not executed, but he was exiled to another town. And as a result, we knew that the police was always watching on him. And was expecting any minute he could really detain and sending away to concentration camp or sending away to a prison or even executed right there. So I was living all the time under the feelings that somebody would come home and take him away and my family would collapse, because the family was not only just three of us, but there were four of children of the of my uncle who was executed in the beginning of the war. So actually it was my father and mother and seven children. Uh-huh. I mean, the death of my father will be the end of all of us. And I was dreaming about being orphaned and all this type of thing. And one terrible thing, I mean, as a child, is to make sure that my father could escape if somebody knocked on the door. So my father have arranged a plan to escape from the back door and telling us, if everybody called, just don't open the door and say excuse and well, give me a chance to leave. So what we wonder living under the feelings that somebody will knock on the door and will be the end. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it didn't happen, but it could happen to many people around us suffer the same problems.
I never really understood why he was persecuted.
Well, the problem is that when the civil war started in 1936, in July, at that time, we were living in the prison I mentioned before. My uncle was the director of the prison. And my father was a chief of service. And they were mostly my uncle, very active in the political and social life of Burgos and so on. We were very comfortable. But overnight, the whole thing changed. In July, we were content and happy. In August, my uncle was assassinated, executed on the road. And my father was condemned to death. So this happened in a matter of 3 or 4 weeks. So why they were killed? Well, when Franco took over in Burgos, who was the first city that was under their influence, you know, he had his headquarters in Burgos. And the first thing that he really did was the extermination on everybody that was opposed to him. Well, not everybody, but the major figures that were opposed to him. Certainly my uncle was director of prison and was a Mason. My father was a Mason too. And they were free thinkers. And as a result, they were the target. And the target was 3 weeks after He took power, Franco, and 3 weeks after, the police came home with government official and told my uncle, we had to send you to a prison. My uncle didn't know at that time. I remember still his pale face, you know, when this happened. And he even wanted to keep his watch. But terrible that my family knew that he's going to be executed, because other people have been executed in the same way. And they tried to keep the watch away from him because they knew they were going to be taken away. But certainly they told him bye-bye with that knowledge that he's going to disappear, and he didn't know. But sure enough, he and other prominent figures in Burgos took in a truck, went to the outskirts of the city, close to a road, a field close to a road, taken out from the truck and executed right away. Mm. We didn't know. They never told us that he was executed. We just figured out because we knew that is what they used to do. And even we don't know what the body was. And we never know. They never told us. And we never tried to even find out, because doing that was another possibility that they couldn't do the same thing to you, because this termination was very quite often for small things, even investigating what your dead people has been. So this is one of the... And then 2 or 3 days later, they came to my father, mm-hmm. and they want to take my father away for the same purpose. But they, instead to execute him, they tried to send him to a prison. And I still remember, this I remember very well, when they took my father. I remember even when, as a child, I want to give him money. I want him to be one penny, to say, well, take a penny, because maybe you will need it. And I can see my mother's face and about letting him go to the prison. And he was in prison for several weeks, expecting to be executed, because at that time there were not any kind of trial of anything. They put you in prison, and there was a list that they have every night. There was a list about people had to be executed the next day. And they tell you the thing is tomorrow. And you just all give all the belongings to your family and go to death, you know, the next day. So there was, and he was for 3 or 4 weeks or even more, just under this kind of stress. So my mother was pregnant and was terrified that she can really end up with 7 kids, you know, and really all of us orphans. And that she was brave enough that to start to ask for mercy to people, important people in Cádiz, because my uncle still have some connections. And eventually he was lucky enough that she asked to see the daughter of one of the Spanish Franco generals. And this lady was a good heart, you know. He said, okay, I understand your problem. I understand what is going to happen to you and your children. Mostly, you know, she was pregnant and she have another 6 children to go. And my father was safe. Otherwise, I would not be here. Mm. And then instead of that, he was sent to La Coruña, like in exile. Uh-huh. And it's when I can... War there for the whole year, the whole 3 years of the war.
So you moved there in 1936 to La Coruña.
1941, really.
Uh-huh. And how did life change as a result of that move?
Well, the move was very drastic for us, because, as I said, my father have 7 kids to take care. He was unemployed. He don't have we don't have money. We don't have anything. We just went put there and I just leave, you know. The situation in the city was extremely bad. There was not food. There was not security. There was almost a starvation. Not quite, but terrible. And as a result, we had to go through all the hardships, or not just the war as such, but just the situation in a town and the... In the war, you know, in Spanish Civil War.
What kind of hardships did you go through, and how did you manage to survive as a family during that time?
Well, the only the managed to survive was my father's determination to survive. There was not any other on the way out, and he just started to do anything possible. I remember he started to sell ice creams in parks, and he eventually opened a shoe repair. repair shoes, and I was helping him to repair shoes at the age of 10 or 11. I used to go to the streets collecting cigarette butts, and from the street, you know, and then recycling in cigarettes and selling to the people. So there was, and I used to smuggling. I was a smuggler in the city to get some money from one district to other. Even when there was a curfew and I could endanger my life, it was the only way because being a child, there was less chance to be caught, you know.
What kind of things did you smuggle?
Well, usually tobacco and liquor. And there was a hotel there that people with, you know, with money was living, and they always required this type of services. And so, and we used to supply them with that, risking our life. But, I mean, this is the only way to survive. And, I mean, what you can do when you're in that situation, you can do anything. My cousins were knitting sky mask for soldiers, and doing anything possible to get as much money as possible. My experience at the time, well, it's too many experiences, I couldn't. But there were two major experiences that would actually struck me. One is the first time in my life that I experienced the power of Germany. We were living in a place where there was the coastline, and there was the Germans. They have an outpost there. And the outpost of Germans was just to detect vessels from Spain that tried to leave and sank them. And some of these vessels, they were full of refugees. And I remember every morning how the Germans used to parade to the outposts, and were impressed to see all this, the discipline and the power of these people, you know, just controlling everything. They looked like they were in control of the whole town, you know. This was one with bad experience to see then. I'm being afraid that, you know, Germany can't take over Spain. Because one of the major problems that we have at the time is that we knew that they were have concentration camps. We knew that they were killing Jews, and we knew they were killing communists and liberals and any kind of things. Nobody say, but you know, by oral transmission, we knew that this happened, and we knew that maybe Germany would like to do the same thing in Spain. They want to come over because they were thinking at that time to come over Spain, occupy Spain, to go to Portugal. And they were thought that if this happened, they would create the concentration camps and took all the leftists to them. And my father was one of them. Even we reached the point that that we were frightened one time that Himmler, the famous Himmler, was invited to go to Spain to explore, we thought. To explore that possibility. It was we thought. I don't know if it was real or not. It's very hard. But anyway, we were frightened that this could be true, that this guy that really goes there and say, well, can let's kill all the Jews in Spain, all these left and all the communists, blah, blah, blah. And overnight, I mean, will be exterminated. So there was very frightened situation. This is two major two experiences. And it was a positive one. And the positive is that we are... England, there were two positives. One was England and the other United States. England, we have was an English consulate in La Coruña, and my father was became friend of him, because all the lefties that were there, we have some connection in some way, and we relate and talk and so on, so on, so on. This was my experience, is participate, hearing all these type of people talking and rumor about what will happen or not. And one time I would remember that my father was talking with the English council and asking, how do you feel about the war? And this was after the American get involved, after the American was... And he said, Hitler is going to be defeated. And he said, why you are so confident? At that time, Hitler was very high. He said, well, one of the reasons is because Hitler cannot compete with the armament that the Allies are producing now. Now, with American involvement, it's going to be overwhelming production of weapons, and Hitler cannot will not be able to cope with it, cannot race. There will be a race, and Hitler will lose it. And losing the armament will be the defeat of Hitler. And he was right. So this is one of the experiences. The other experience that was a good one, although eventually turned to be negative, but anyway, was the expectation that we have of America. So America was a glorified idol. America was the best thing that would ever happen to us. We really thought that America is going to save us, is going to, I mean, we are living in a dictator country with Franco was helping Germany. I mean, the conclusion is when the war ending, I am sure that the UN, America is going to take Franco away from the power and the Republican come back again. So all of us will have these expectations very strongly. So, and then we became very much impressed by the American style of life. You know, like disinhibited, freedom, democracy. That was very great. But it didn't happen. Because they decided that that Spain should not be liberated. And they protect Franco to the last minute until Eisenhower, I think in 1953, make a pact with Franco and decide that Franco should remain. And this was the end of our expectations, and it was a tragedy of the leftists in Spain to have this lack of support, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So these were the two major things.
Do you remember that moment when you and your family realized that you weren't going to get help?
Yeah, this was happened later. It happened later. It was happening, well, in 1939, the World Wars, and we thought that it's going to happen. 1940, 41, 44. Now, in 1939, the World War start, and our expectations became very high. During the time that the Spanish Civil War was there, we were thinking to winning the war, so there was not any expectations about America. There was not only just to winning the war, but the fact that Germany was helping Franco, we thought that, that eventually Franco would be defeated because although there was the Russian helping the other ones. So I would have some expectations that actually something could be. But that time we thought we were going to win. But when we lost, when the Second World War started in 1939. And at that time, we thought now is it, because Franco is in part of Germany and is it. And it was in Germany all the way until 1945. At the end, he were afraid that Franco will allow the Germans occupy the Spain, but actually he didn't, and was his fortune. He was a smart guy in that way. And as a result, he became like so-called anti-communist bastion, and the Americans started to change after the war, with this Cold War started, they started to change his attitude towards Spain, because they thought that would ally against communists, and Franco started to get more credit among Americans. So at that time, we still thought that this could be possible in 1945, 46 to 47. And then I remember one thing is that they put that resolution to the UN, and the UN rejected. And I don't remember whether it was that, but it was about 48 or 49. And at that point, we started to think that this was more or less the end. Until finally, the relation with the Eisenhower government was so high and so positive, even Eisenhower visited Spain and visited Franco, that we thought was the end. So it was during that visit is where actually we thought that it was no alternative.
Uh-huh. So it seems like Franco was presenting a very different picture of the way that he was to America than the way that he actually was when he was, you know.
Well, I mean, Franco was very shrewd man. He really, he's not intelligent, he's rude. He was from Galicia, and people from Galicia are the same. I mean, in a way that they never tell you the truth. They always give you yes or not, but they never commit themselves. And as long as the German was winning, he was pro-German. And even matter of fact, have a meeting with Hitler and everything was fine. Or something. Yes, yes, sir, yes, yes, sir. But when this Hitler start to be defeated gradually, he realized that it's going to be the end, and he started to withdraw. Even when the meeting that he had with Hitler, I think it was in 1942 or something, Hitler used to say that to meet Franco is like to go to a dentist's office and have two tooth taken away. Because he was not giving up, you know. He was really saying, yes, yes, sir, but I can do the other thing behind. So in that way, he was able to keep Spain away from the war. But at the same time, he was able to keep himself as a dictator until 1975. And America accepted him because at that time was the Cold War, and Spain was considered a bastion against communism. So, I mean, therefore, for America, was the perfect country to protect, you know? And this was the whole thing, yes.
Did you feel really isolated living in this under this dictator, I mean, when you were living there?
Yeah, isolated. Well, I mean, I was a child, you know. Being a child, you don't feel isolated. You had friends here and there and so on. But you feel isolated in the sense that you just cannot communicate anything else to anyone that could be damaging to your family. I mean, any kind of liberal ideas or whatever, because you could be, you know, denounced or something. In that way, I was feeling isolated. But as a child, I mean, you know, just follow the regular routine. One important thing over there was the religious aspect, and is that the Catholic religion was extremely, extremely strong, helping Franco. To the point that they used to encourage people to practically to not exterminate or kill, but at least, you know, eliminate Rojo, they would call, anti-religious people.
So was your family Catholic? Were they religious?
We were Catholic, but were not practicing. And one of my little frustrations and anger against the government and the cleric in general, the Catholic Church, is the fact that I was rejected from high school because they say that my family didn't teach religion to us, and I was wiped out from there. And after that, I had to go to the street and start to sell newspapers. And when I was selling newspaper one time, I saw the funeral of this priest that used to say that. And I tell you, but I was really happy, you know. One of the situations that you see a funeral and you laugh. I say, now you're 10, you before me, you know. And I was about 10 years old, you know, but I really took that very serious.
So even at that early age, how did all of this influence your political ideas? And I know that, you know, I would say that you're not necessarily pro-Catholic. So how did
very strongly, though.
Right.
The Catholic aspect, I don't have much in the beginning, but still, when Franco came, tried to create a youth movement among everybody under 16 or 14, used to be part of the Falangist fascist movement. And they used to force us to go to the mass every Sunday and communion and all these type of things and so on. So, and then when I start to hate, you know, this indoctrination and this force to accept religion as such, and since then I was all the way. So, and politically, I was against dictatorship from the real beginning. So more or less, my family was in the so-called liberal socialist type of movement, you know. Free thinker. My father was Mason and my uncle was Mason. All these people at that time, people were very, very liberal.
Mm. And so as you started growing up and being older, became a teenager, and when you were in your 20s, Franco was obviously still in power, and you were developing a real sense of intellectual, political identity. So what would you say in your 20s, you know, what was that identity like, and what was the environment like? And were you interested in politics? Were you able to go out and express yourself with other people? And
no, well, there was not any possibility to express yourself as a political party, because there were no political parties. And there was a fantastic amount of oppression. So the only parties that actually you could belong is a fascist party, Falangist. And actually, all of us were belonging to that just by my mandate, you know. So there was not any way at all to participate in the political life. The only thing was student movements, And we used to have, you know, protests in the university and things like that, you know, as often as we could, you know, yeah. But there was not any real affiliation for anything. It was impossible. After Franco died, the whole thing changed, you know, but that time it was the norms, although on individual basis, I used to associate with friends of mine that they were had the same type of feelings. One of my best friends was the son of the governor of Sevilla, who was executed in Sevilla by Franco. Other friends were suffering. So we created a little group, a little clique, and we used to talk among ourselves and excited and do a little protest. Like I remember one time that we went to celebrate the New Year's under the statue of Mariana Pineda, who was the first woman, Republican women that make the Republican flag, the same thing like here, Pepsi, but it was these were the same type of character, and he was executed, or he was hanged. And there was a statue there, and we used to went there and start to drink there on her behalf, Republicans and so on, and make all this kind of fuss about how wonderful it was to be liberated and be. But the police was always around, so it was very risky. But we used to do the little expression of independence, but nothing really organized. It was impossible. Mm. The only people that organized themselves, they were people that went to the mountains and developed underground freedom fighters. But they were considered bandits by the government. And with that, I had some kind of experience, though. But it was after that.
How do you think, just looking at it, in the long term, how do you think living under Franco and a fascist dictatorship affected your mind? How did it get into your mind, and how did it end up affecting the way that you view the world?
Well, I mean, I think that more or less the dictatorship would actually make you more angry than anything else and became more radical. If you are moderate liberal, if you are living in this kind of situation, you became more leftist. It's increasing your political ideas of freedom and democracy and so on. So, and be at the same time being angry because you cannot express yourself. But actually, you know, I don't think that the people that was not democratic, the people that were, you know, Franco aides, I don't think they changed. I have a friend of mine that is the best friend that I have, and his family was in the opposite side, and they were persecuted because I say that both sides were suffer, and they suffered too, not as much as we because nobody was killed there. But he was Catholic and all these type of things, and he didn't change. Although, you know, he's less Catholic than he used to be, but you know, I mean that this. This is something that you really, is part of your background, you know?
Right. I think it's interesting. I wanted to ask you more questions about Caesar, but I don't think we'll have time. You have a close, lifelong relationship with this man. His name is Caesar. He's Caesar Luis. But like you said, you grew up in completely different sides of the fence politically.
Right.
And now Caesar is a staunch Republican and you're a Democrat and you have a dialogue about that. But I always thought it was interesting that both of you immigrated to the United States, became doctors, married an American, and had a daughter. How do you account for the similarities of how
your lives
ended up?
Having Dora, it's kind of control that. But the other things, I think the hardships of being under Franco, the hardship of don't have any outlet for our profession, the hardship of being deprived of freedom affected the Republic, pro-Franco people too, because I mean you cannot talk even. I mean it was like oppression in general. I mean you cannot get jobs, you cannot get that, you cannot get that. You had to go to all the bureaucracy, so it's affecting everybody. So I think this actually we have in common, that we have the same difficulties in make our life better. And America was the place to come. It's when I say that America was on the peak, and I came here because of these expectations.
Because you were thinking about immigrating to other countries too, right?
Yeah, at that time there was not any place to go. I mean, no job, something like that. And I tried to emigrate to Brazil, to Canada, Nigeria was another country, and Venezuela, and but eventually I did to America, to Canada, and then to America.
Mm-hmm.
And Cesar was exactly the same like me, and both of us, we did very well. But it was not easy, I tell you.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Well, what were some of the major factors in your decision to immigrate? Was it living under Franco that was one of the major decisions?
My father always wanted to emigrate. My father always wanted to emigrate, even he was in Galveston. He was planning to emigrate at that time in the 30s to America. So, and he inspired, he more or less instilled on us the idea of emigration. But mostly to America. But the major decision was the lack of opportunities that we can have as a doctors in Spain. And the second was, in my case, was the sense of freedom and democracy, a disinhibition and country opportunities, all these type of things that America have was at the top of the globe, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they have this prestige that everybody really want to go.
Did you find that freedom? Did you find what you were looking for?
I hope this question is very difficult. Maybe when these things are going to Congress, right? Well, I found and I didn't found. It's interesting because I found this sense of freedom according with the administrations. It's more or less like the administration, according with how the administration is, then you had this freedom or no. We'll say in Clinton, during the Clinton time, I was feeling fantastic. I thought that was my time. And then when the Nixon came, and it was a disaster. And then when Reagan came, it started to deteriorate. And then at the present administration. So actually, the freedom per se is the political atmosphere at that time that you... But the freedom, there is freedom. There is freedom all over, and there is democracy. There is not any doubt about.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I don't think that the American people have enough political education and political views, universal political views, to understand what freedom is in different circumstances. I think that when I came here, there were one bad things that nobody wanted to talk about, and it's about politics and religion, two things, and religion. Religion because, you know, it's religion and you cannot bother your neighbors, and politics because all of them, they are crooks. So interesting enough, religion is very important, extremely important, and politics in Europe. And we remember have been discussing that hours and hours with our friends, philosophy, religion, talking about priests, talking about everything connected with these two areas. They were part of our life experiences. Here you cannot get that. At least I couldn't get that. Regarding religious, because you cannot really be anything but low-key. You know, you can be any religion that you want, but you just cannot be extremes. I mean, if I say tomorrow I am atheist, I'm going to be displaced from my neighborhood. I mean, it's another religion that don't be an atheist. I mean, what is the difference? But I cannot say that. If I am a Jewish area, it's not so good to say that you are not Jew. You have to blend with your little community. And this is not religion freedom, I understand. So I will say that religious freedom exists, but with certain limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And regarding the political even, in my opinion, is worse in the sense that if you are a little off the mainstream, there is no place to go. You can be Republican and Democrats, but if you are Democrat, you are very close to Republicans. You know, it's not too much of a difference. If you really want to go, you have to follow the rules of the country, and the rules of the country are very strict and very well determined from 200 years that you really cannot divert it. We say it's not like in Europe, like they are coalition governments, and you can be communist, liberal, name it, whatever you want, you know, or just a small party or green party or whatever, and be part of the government and create a coalition to counteract the government, and you have you really don't feel like the major, like everybody else, you have an outlet for this expression. Here, I don't think you have an outlet. You can be one thing or the other. Like now, I mean, we are looking for a Democrat leader. hardly can find one. You know, I mean, but this is the major problem, that the politician, there are too much politics here, but inbreeding politics is not idealistic and open policy, like happening in England with the parliament or in France or in Italy. I mean, they have too many governments, but they're still they are doing fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the political constraints that I think. Freedom, there is freedom and democracy, but I think that had to be modified a little.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Is that good? Okay, that's the conclusion of the interview with Cesar A. Cortez for now. That was part one. Thank you.
Okay, good.